You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Shouldn't you be at work?
It's a lovely chip! Oh, it's a brilliant goal from Lars Boheeden!
Still, it's not away. Southgate's shot. Milosevic scores.
DPR could do with a bit of magic from him. Maybe this is it. It is! Andy Sinton from nothing.
Brian Roy has headed for it into the lead.
Whelan. Oh, what a goal from Noel Whelan.
No power on it whatsoever. But Taibbi has made a horrendous error.
Now, you know him better than anybody, probably. Do you back him to score quickly, yes or no?
Yes.
Tony Hatton.
No.
Hello and welcome to episode 7 of series 4 of Quickly Kevin, Will He Score? I am Chris Cole and joining me, Josh Widdicombe.
Oi, oi.
And also welcome back. He sat here in a full-length sleeve Sampdoria top. It's Mr. Michael Marden.
Hello.
Welcome back from manager holiday.
Thanks, mate. Yeah.
How was manager holiday?
Great. I went on a sort of 90s themed manager holiday. I went on Google Maps and I found where, you know, the Crinkly Bottom theme park.
Cricket St. Thomas.
Yeah. I went there and a great old time.
Did you, we discussed at length while you were away, the concept of manager holiday on Championship Manager.
Right.
Did you ever do manager holiday?
I would sometimes do it in the pre-season. You go out and sort of play with your mates and then come back. And I just wanted that boring admin bit out of the way. But I'd never let it play my fixtures for me.
did you sign any players in that manager
holiday? No.
Never turned up and...
No. There were on the versions of the game where you could specify what was allowed to happen.
Oh, no. We were talking about the early incarnations where you'd taken another job.
Absolutely not. No way.
Do you want some correspondence?
Yes, please.
I'm Jim Rosenthal, and this is the Electronic Postbag.
You've got mail.
Okay, this is from Simon Hollidge. Good surname. Right. Whilst listening to episode 4 of your pre-season training camp, I thought I'd combine two subjects I now affiliate with you guys. Do I remember this right? And the bad football player having the newest kit piece. You guys have the perfect man to confirm so. Whilst playing under 13, under 14... the local youth team, Lakeview, I have a vivid memory of a young Mr. Skull playing with me in the said side in goal, wearing a beautiful new West Ham goalkeeper top.
What?
Yes. Although a beautiful piece of kit, our team and indeed Chris in goal were actually as terrible as Pavel Cernicek's mid-90s multicoloured delights. Did this actually happen? Is my youth a miss? Please reshape my message from Simon Hollidge. I would be a ginger striker if so.
Firstly, Pavel Cernicek's Newcastle kits were not horrible. They were fantastic.
Yeah, they were very nice.
But, Skull?
Did you play in goal for Lakeview?
Unbelievably.
That's such an Essex name for a football team.
The derbies against Lakeside, they used to go off. That's unbelievably true.
If you were writing a piece of fiction about an Essex youth football team, you'd call them Lakeview.
Lakeview. Yeah, I did. I played for Lakeview, but I don't remember Simon. That's insane.
Did you play in goal?
I had a spell where I went in goal. Our goalkeeper got... So we started the season with a manager, and we were rubbish. We were losing every week. And the manager either sacked. I don't think he would have got sacked. You wouldn't get sacked
what?
From like,
at youth
thing.
Level.
I think he just quit. But the manager's son was our goalkeeper, so we were out of a goalkeeper. I think I was like playing in like midfield or up front, so we had no goalkeeper. We went to training one night, and I had an unbelievable going goal where I was just saving everything. And so I think I ended up in goal. That's absolutely true. But I don't remember where... I wouldn't have worn a West Ham kit in a match, but I remember one game. I was on, you know, when you catch the ball as a goalkeeper and you go to kick it out. I hadn't had much practice at catching the ball and kicking it out of my foot. And so in the middle of this game, I was suddenly having to kick it on the volley out from my feet. And with the nerves or whatever, I kept shin rolling it off my leg every kick I got in my hand. And to the extent the opposition strikers were chatting to each other every time I grabbed the ball going, watch this, it'll shin roll it. And I inevitably did, and they'd all start laughing. And this went on for the entire game. It was an awful spelling goal. The other thing about our manager was that He, the one who left half of the season was in charge of washing the kits. And because we were awful, our captain was a bit of a card. And I remember one game we'd lost heavily and our kits were a bit dirty. And he was like, right, come in, don't get any more dirt on your kits. And our captain went, come on, let's all slide in the opposition goal mouth, which was really muddy. We all slid and he started losing his mind at us all for having slid and got his white kits getting so muddy. So it may have been the case that he held onto the kits and we had to bring our own for the next game.
Yeah.
This, I think, could be a rich vein of form for us. The question is, have you ever played football with me, Josh Widdicombe, or Michael Marden? Send it in to our email address. Hello, quickly, Kevin. A lot of suspicious looks being cast across the table.
I'm worried about that.
Give us your review. If you ever played football with any of us as a kid in the 90s, send us a review of how you thought it went.
Yeah, I'd like to specify at youth level, not as a man.
Michael will be vigorously deleting emails as they come in, I'm sure. But I'll be checking the junk mail.
Right, now, we've promised this for a couple of weeks. Do you want a complete list of everyone who swallowed their tongue?
I know you wanted a specific soundtrack to this.
Casualty, please. Okay. Kevin Moran swallowed his tongue in January 1987 when Man U beat Newcastle 4-1. Reading player Ashley Williams swallowed his tongue in an away game on a frozen pitch. It was against either Newport or Swansea. Hull's Andy Baton swallowed his tongue in a game in around 1990. Big one. Ronaldo swallowed his tongue before the 1998 World Cup final, according to some reports.
Wow.
Paul Warhurst. That's all I've got on that one. Steve Jenkins, formerly of Huddersfield Town, swallowed his tongue whilst playing for Cardiff. Dion Dublin saved Michael Owen's life when he swallowed his tongue in a France 98 warm-up match against Morocco.
Wow.
And John Fashanu swallowed his tongue, but had his tongue pulled out by Notts County keeper Steve Cherry. Thanks to Matt Gates, Mark Wood, Chris Devaney, Rob Phillips, Chris Hall, Nathan Pugsley, Dan Gage, and David Clare for all the stories of footballers swallowing their tongues.
I'd love it if somebody out there could create a Wikipedia page.
For swallowing the tongue.
Swallowing the tongue. If anybody wants to, and put a hyperlink to our podcast in there as well.
Yes, please. Do you want one more?
Yeah.
So we've been discussing my Eddie McGoldrick theme tune that I always say, Eddie McGoldrick. So we've had a few in. Hello, chaps. Great work on the new series. Been top quality. Like Josh with Eddie McGoldrick, I have a footballer tuna affliction, but with the Manchester City and Ireland legend, Terry Phelan. Me and my mates, largely Sunderland fans, no Phelan affiliation, used to sing, Dancing on the Ceiling, Oh What a Feeling, Terry Terry Phelan. We did also have a less successful but critically acclaimed period when we went with Ronnie Whelan for the same song.
Do you know what I thought recently came out of absolutely nowhere? I heard Deck the Halls with, it's approaching Christmas, and I suddenly thought, Deck the Halls with Basil Bolly, fa la 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 la.
Exactly, that's what we're looking for.
Lovely.
And it just comes to you. It's not one where we don't want you to try and fit footballers into songs. It's ones that have just come to you. Also, he's got on the same Terry Phelan. Amazon's current advertising campaign, Can You Feel It? I constantly have Terry Phelan, Terry Phelan going around in my head. There's also someone, Chris Rutter, who sings Kanchelskis 2 Can't Touch This by MC Hammer. If you've got any more of them.
What?
Do you want me to just move on from the Andre Kanchelskis Can't Touch This, or would you like the recording he sent to us of himself showing us how it works?
I mean, I'm not a fucking idiot.
Yeah. I haven't listened to this yet, so it might well be, you know, sex sounds or something, but here we go.
Kanchelskis. 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 Kanchelskis.
He's done a great job on the different vocal deliveries.
Yeah.
I know we're not going to be able to touch this correspondence until series five, but if you've got any 90s footballer's name who you think is perfect against a certain song, get in touch, record it yourself, send it in to hello@quicklykevin.com. I feel like this will be amazing in series five.
Right, now, this feels like we're dusting off an old favourite. It's like when Brian Wilson released Smile after 30 years.
The legendary John Moncur episode.
The legendary John Moncur episode, yeah. We're going to play it live at some point as well. So, John Moncur, this is an interview with one of Chris's favourite players of all time, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Spurs, West Ham, covers a lot of ground.
It's also, we've got contrasting takes on the same story. So if you listen to our Stuart Pearce episode two episodes ago, he talked about his view on the clock incident. Now, we recorded John Moncur before the Stuart Pearce one, possibly prompting us to push Stuart Pearce in that direction with an anecdote that he didn't find as funny as John Moncur. Here's John Moncur.
Our guest this week is one of the central characters of the 90s for me. Spells at Spurs, Swindon, and most importantly, of course, West Ham United. Welcome to the show, John Moncur.
Great to be here. Looking
pleasure to have you. We can try not to talk about West Ham, but it'll come up.
Somehow.
So we like to ask the hard-hitting questions on the show. I'm going to kick off with a nice, easy one for you. Can you name all your shirt sponsors in the 90s, beginning with Spurs?
Blimey.
Just to be clear, it's not all like this. It's just to settle you in.
Just to settle you in, yeah.
I'm getting a little, yeah. Tottenham probably had one main sponsor, was Alston.
Correct.
Correct. Any free Holston?
Oh, yeah, plenty of that.
That's good.
Half of every game. Some before we gave up.
What about Swindon?
Swindon? Oh, we were sponsored by Honda.
I've got down here Burma.
Burma, that's it. Petrol, we got free.
Is it petrol?
Did you? Petrol?
Yeah. That's pretty good, isn't it?
Unbelievable. Yeah.
How did you get your free petrol? What, like a jerry can off the train?
No, they had Burma stations round Swindon.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, we got sponsored cars.
Yeah.
Free petrol. But
that's pretty good, isn't it?
But in all fairness, I used to travel with Mickey Hazard, who was an ex Tottenham player, so I knew him from Spurs years ago. Tightest man in the world. So we was driving. We was just outside. Where was we? Basically, got on the M25. We was going down to Southampton, and he went about 50. Well, it was about 50 minutes out of his way to find a Burma station. And we ended up late with a kickoff because he was early. That's how bad he was.
So in our first series of this, we discussed like the first famous person we ever saw, and Michael's first famous person he ever saw was Michaela Strachan from the Really Wild Show. But actually, you were the first famous person I ever saw up close and personal. Oh, and it was Big Al's Adventure House, which is like a child's like playground thing in East London, in Fairlop Waters. And I was in the ball pond, I looked out, and there's John Moncur doing little Cruyff turns with the balls, a loose ball from the pond. And I just stood there, I just sat on the edge like frozen, I couldn't
full
believe
Swindon
it.
Kit. Full selling petrol in the car park.
Do you remember that, John, doing Cruyff turns, a little ball from
I actually did. Obviously, having three boys, I was always taking them to places like that. And yeah, the obviously the child in me, I couldn't keep still, so I joined in.
So let's wind the clock back. 1991, you're at Tottenham. This is the year they win the FA Cup. You were in and around that squad that season. I think you made 11 appearances for Spurs in 91. Decent team out there.
Yeah, I mean, Tottenham at the time was probably, they called it a cup team over a period of, I don't know, since Bill Nicholson won the 66 double. Tottenham was always sort of known as a cup team. And especially the time I was here, we had some great players and couldn't really consistently beat the top teams. So, but they had obviously good runs in the FA Cup and the League Cup.
Did you play in that 91 FA Cup run?
No, I played a couple of appearances I made, but obviously didn't make the final, which was disappointing.
But you're in on the pictures.
But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, getting on the pictures, that's it.
So where were you for the final? Were you on the bench?
No, I was actually 13th man, we say, because in them days, 14th man, there was two subs.
Two subs.
So, which, in all fairness, it was it went against young kids because a lot of kids now get appearances off the bench because there's a load of subs. But
yeah,
it was good. It was great that year because you had so much talent in that team with Paul Gascoigne and players like that.
That cup run was like synonymous with Gazza. Like, obviously he got the winner against Arsenal in the semi-final, and then the final nearly cuts Gary Charles in half and does his crease shit. Yeah. You must have been with him before the game. Well, how fired up was he?
Yeah, obviously the balance of, you know, getting that. He was so excited, and he was probably one of the best players, I would say, in the world at that time, midfield. And he proved that in the World Cup. But with Gazza, it was getting that balance, and he was over, you know. He was overzealous, no doubt. I mean, the first tackle, we nearly took Charlo's head off. I mean, that was GBH, wasn't it? But I remember one of the games, this is how good he was. We played Portsmouth, and go to Fratton Park's quite an hard game. And basically, it was a terrible pitch that day. But that night, after we had our pre-match meal, Gazza couldn't keep still, couldn't go to sleep. So we went in the hotel, there was a squash court. So there was about half a dozen of us, and Tottenham played it all the time. It's like piggy in the middle. And basically, it's we all do it now, like as a warm-up. But we was in there till 2 o'clock in the morning.
What, just playing piggy in the middle?
Yeah, ridiculous. I mean, that's how you prepare. It didn't matter to me, because I was, again, 14th man.
Yeah.
But next day we woke up, I said, my legs are gone. And he, like, no, he couldn't walk, Gazza. I mean... And he was doing all mad sort of exercises and all for your thighs, where you was having competitions. Who can stand, bend your knees with your back to the wall and hang there the longest. I mean, it's a fire burner, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we got out the next day, and I won't name who was there, but obviously we was like shot. So I was laughing because I'm 14th man. So anyway, I goes in the bar because I used to be on loan at Portsmouth, so I knew the people there. So I went and see a few mates. I'd had a couple of brandies before the game. All of a sudden, the assistant manager runs up. Terry Fenwick's broke his leg in the warm-up. So now, my legs are gone. I've had a couple of brandies. I'm thinking, please don't get on. The pitch is like a quagmire. And Gazza was having an absolute nightmare. His legs are gone. We're 1-0 down. So you're thinking, right, we're out of the cup here. And he sort of, this is how good he was. He sort of run forward and scored an header, basically out of... You know, on a counter attack, and the adrenaline of him, you know, he's run back. They took kick off. 2 minutes later, he gets the ball, drops a shoulder, beats one, plays a 1-2, gets it back, goes in and scores another fantastic goal. 2-1, he's the hero, you know. And if you knew how he prepared that game, people wouldn't have believed it. But that's how good he was.
When you, in those days, did anyone have any like concerns about him or think he should? Did you think he'd change, or do you think he'd play his whole career like this, or did people think,
I just think
someone will get a handle on him? And
yeah, I just think he was that type of character and that good. I mean, Venables, the manager at the time, he just let him do what he wanted. Because if you try to restrict him or tie him down to a certain way of living or lifestyle or position when he played, you wouldn't get the best out of him.
Yeah,
he was just a free spirit, so he could get away with it because he was fantastic and he was young, but obviously the lifestyle caught up with him in the end.
Didn't all the players go and visit him in hospital after that cup final?
Yeah, we all went after. Obviously, you know, it was devastating for him because of what happened, you know, but he wanted to get out of bed and come to the party with his cruciate hanging off. But the doctor wouldn't let him.
But was it a case of him being dangerously wound up before that final? Like, could you tell that it was like he was just not in the right headspace for it?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I actually see him before, because in the day with the football focus and all that, the cup final was on telly when it all day from when you got up, and we was actually in one of the old tellies, and it was behind the curtain where we had our pre-match meal, so it was another room. So we was in there, and someone said something half detrimental about Spurs not winning, and he kicked the telly through, basically not
on the
not
morning through, of the cup
final. Yeah. Like, for a laugh, he kicked it off the cabinet it was on. And it went backwards, you heard a big smack, and we just all ran out laughing. And I thought, blimey, here we go. Bring on Gary Charles.
Some characters in that Spurs team as well. Steve Sedgley. We've heard that Steve Sedgley was probably more mad than Gazza. Can you
He's up there, Sid, yeah. Definitely. It was a lot of players, a lot of characters.
Yeah.
And it was one of them, you had to be careful what you wore every day in training. It got that ruthless, the stick.
What was Gary Lineker like to play with? Or was that...
Yeah, I mean, Gal was more, you know, he was quite straight, but he still had a good sense of humour underneath it all, you know?
So your time at Spurs came to an end in the summer of 92 when you went to Swindon.
Yeah.
With a brand new player manager, Glenn Hoddle.
Yeah.
How well did you know Glenn Hoddle?
Yeah, I mean, I was best mates with his brother through the years. Carl, sadly, he's dead now. But he was a great lad, Carl. And Glenn obviously saw a lot of me as a kid because he was watching his brother. So he knew me backwards. And
is there a kind of, when you're signed by someone who's such a like legendary player, is that kind of a thrill in itself that someone like Glenn Hoddle has put their trust in you?
Without a doubt. I mean, I look back, I went out on loan, I think, about six times, and hence got the name the Lone Ranger. But it wasn't funny at the time because I just wanted to start my career, really.
Yeah.
Looking back, you probably look at four of them clubs I would have signed for and nothing materialised. So it's a confidence sort of, it's a bit of a downer when it don't come off and stuff like that, and your confidence suffers a little bit. And then when Glenn come in for me, I think they paid 80 grand for me. It was a real boost because for me, he was probably, along with Gazza, the best midfield player I've ever seen and played with. So for him to sign me, that was a real, as you say, a real confidence boost.
He was player manager at the time, presumably. So were you paired up with him in midfield?
No, at Swindon, he played a system where, because he'd been out and played under Wenger at Monaco, he sort of played a 5-3 at the back at the time. Oh, right, yeah. But what he would do, we had two sort of good wing backs, up and down wing backs, Nicky Summerby and Paul Bowden, and he would flood the midfield. So he'd have three of us in midfield. He would play sweeper, and basically he'd come in as a third, fourth midfielder. Right. So at times we would have six across the middle of the park, and and it was fantastic. I mean, some of the best football I'd ever played, because you know, you had obviously Glenn Sarnoff, there was Mickey Hazard in there, who was a great footballer. Obviously myself, Martin Ling, so, and them two wide players. So his ethos was just keep the ball. You know what I mean? If we got the ball, they can't beat us.
Yeah.
So it was all built on possession. And really, we got up where we, you know, Swindon Town never had the budget. It was just him, really, and his ethos and the players he got in and the way he played the game that got us into the Premier League.
Was he a show-off when he was playing football? Because we spoke to some people that played for him and said he would just, on the training ground, he would just humiliate people with his skills.
He was a fantastic player, yeah. I mean, I think he got frustrated a little bit when he became a manager that people couldn't pick it up and do what he wanted them to do, you know, but...
That is the problem with Martin Ling when you're Glenn Hoddle.
Yeah. With Glenn, it's funny because at Tottenham, it was always the defender's fault because he played in midfield. But when he was at the back and we lost, it was always the midfield's fault. You know what I mean? But you couldn't really argue with him because he was that good. But him and Mickey Hazard, I remember him having an argument about half hour over one pass. Glenn played it to Mickey, and Mickey was as stubborn as you like as well. And Mickey got caught on it on the edge of the box by a fella called Gavin Maguire, who was a real hard man of his time. And he steamed like he was out to do Mickey, and he got caught and ended up, they scored. And this argument went on for half hour in the training ground. Mickey was saying, you should have put it on me left foot. Why did you put it on me right foot? And Glenn's saying, well, you're a good enough player to handle it there. You shouldn't have called for it. And because obviously they was both the same. And really, Glenn stifled Mickey's career a little bit at Tottenham because he was so good, you know. Yeah. It went on and on and on. But so Glenn would never have, you know, hold his hands up and say that it was my fault.
Why was Glenn Hoddle at Swindon? Were they like, why Swindon? Surely Glenn Hoddle, and I mean, no offence to you, John, but what was Glenn Hoddle, who'd just come from Monaco to Swindon? How does that, like, did you have money? Was there good money behind them, or?
No, I think what it was his, it was his first managerial post, so he just wanted to prove himself as a manager because. I suppose it's hard to get a job as a manager really now,
Yeah.
You know, with all the competition. And even back in the day then, most managers had to cut their teeth lower down. They wouldn't really walk straight into a top club.
I suppose we had Peter Shilton at Plymouth.
And what about his method? So he's just been with Arsene Wenger in Monaco. Is he coming back? Is he like, is he just reinvented like training and like tactics? Is he like stuff you've never heard before?
Well, as I say, I think it was that got us up really, because he changed a lot of the dietitian side of it. He wouldn't let lads eat certain things. Fizzy drinks, they went out the window. I remember having. And he was big on body fat and stuff like that, so that was never really in. It was the first
time.
Did
the players respond to that, or you just?
Well, you had to do it, otherwise you wouldn't play. But it did work, because, as I say, we shouldn't have gone up into the Premiership, really. Yeah. Like, if you looked at the budget and the players we had, so it was down to him, definitely.
So you came up via the playoffs. You played Leicester in the final at Wembley. You started that game. You go 3-0 up. You're thinking, well, this is done here, isn't it? And then Leicester pull it back to 3-3.
Yeah, unbelievable. I remember that. In all fairness, Glenn actually scored right on half time. So we went in the change room 1-0 up. And
when he's a player manager there, does he go, great goal for me there?
Well done,
Glenn. Well done, Glenn. That was absolute. Keep that up.
To Glenn, everyone.
You could all be more like Glenn.
We all had a pint of milk back in the day, and we were able to raise our milk to him. But no, we come out half time, be honest with you. We was 3-0 up within about 10 minutes. I made both the goals, so I was on for some of my feathers were up. And I used to get a little bit leery. And I remember looking over to Nicky Sunby, who was our right wing back. And I'll give it the old light me one up, Nick. We're going to the Premiership, right?
Mine smoking a cigarette.
Yeah, right under the nose of the midfielder I didn't like at the time. But
name names.
Yeah, I can't name them. Well, there was two of them. There was Oldfield and Thompson, basically. But I'd had a bit of a ding-dong with Oldfield before, the game before anyway. So it was to wind him up. Within about 15 minutes, it's 3-3. He comes over and gives it, do you fancy a light? And I couldn't really talk because I was that deflated. I thought, why did I peak too early? But anyway, we got the penalty and...
Paul Bowden
and won 4-3, yeah.
If ever a man can be relied on with a pressure penalty, it's Paul Bowden.
In the red shirt.
So that summer... You're looking forward to the Premier League. Here we go. Glenn Hoddle, though, doesn't fancy. He's off to Chelsea. Was that a bit of a shock?
Not really. I think there was a lot of speculation. And when we see his agent turn up at one of the hotels, it was sort of give the game away. And I was having a meeting in London.
Chelsea car parked outside. Free Chelsea car.
Free Chelsea free car. Spence.
Ken Bates.
Ken Bates filling it up for me.
When we had a golf day and Ken Bates was caddying for him, it sort of took it away. it was a blow, be honest with you, because I think that the only chance we would have had realistically of surviving the Premiership would have been if he stayed. So.
And do you guys have that discussion? When he's gone, would anyone vocally say, we're fucked, dear lads?
Yeah, we all knew it. We all knew it.
Did Glenn come to you? Like, did you have a team meet where everyone say, look, I'm off? Or was it just like, he's not?
Nah. No. He actually, like, he'd done the big... Because we went round Swindon and basically we had
open
top bus. And he got out all on the mic and all the crowd was singing Room to Stay. And he sort of didn't give nothing away. But it was probably done, to be honest with you, because I think he went the next day or next couple of days.
I'm still on the Everton bus, just drove it straight. So John Gorman took over.
Yeah, John.
Did you get on with him?
Yeah, I like John. Lovely fella. He was one of them blokes. He was a little bit too honest, I think. To be a manager at times. And
do you get these people that are like Ray Harford, who are better assistants and then they get promoted and they're always like... too nice and too close to the players.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that John took it to heart. You know, he let it get to him a little bit because in the end, as results don't go, the place turns a little bit, gets a bit sour. I don't think he was just cut out to for management, he was a better assistant. I mean, I remember the, I think it was the Oldham game. Well, I remember it well, because basically my first boy was born that night and I was up all night, and he said, look, come on, Monty, we need you and all that. So I turned out, and I think it was a Wednesday night, real hot day, hottest day of the year. And it weren't the greatest game in the world. And right at the last knock-ins, they've nicked a goal. And he done the old dying swan, didn't he, on the pitch. I had him on Match of the Day and he was face down, prostrate on the pitch. You know what I mean? What manager does that? You know what I mean? We're only two. It was our first home game in a year. So the writing was on the wall there.
You had a bit of a nightmare start. Didn't win any of your first 16 games.
No. Was it 16?
16, yeah.
Yeah, that was a record, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, the record of this day.
Bastards.
And he held on to the job, didn't he?
Yeah. And funny story behind that one. We basically, I think we'd got beat at Villa. And we got well beat up there. I think it was about 4-1. And we come, that's how late it was in the season. There was snow on the ground on the Monday. Honestly. And we had QPR, I think it was the Wednesday. And he said, can we just go out for a jog? And where we trained in Swindon was up, sort of out of the way a little bit. And basically, as we're jogging by this pub, it was about 11 o'clock, half 11, I've actually gone to John, should we go in and have a couple of brandies, warm us up a bit for a bit of banter? But he's obviously a bit old school, so might be a bit of bonding going on here. He said, all right, he said, we'll knock him up. I think his name was Jeff or something, the owner. So someone knew him. We had knocked him up. He can't believe it. All of a sudden, there's 16 Swindon players with the tracksuits on. So we've gone in there, and Johnny Gorman's gone, like, basically 16 doubles. So there he is. It took him like 10 minutes to get them all up.
What time of day is this?
Well, it's about, I reckon it was probably about half 11 in the afternoon. So we've down the old double, let the dust settle. We've gone, so we have one more, John. So he's gone. Go on in one more and we're done. I mean, worst thing ever, isn't it? 20 minutes later, there's like another lot, 10 steak sandwiches, 8 Guinnesses, right? All of a sudden, we was in there for about, I don't know, 5 or 6 hours. All of us mangled. And he slipped off, Johnny, but I think he done it. He had a bit of method behind it, a bit of team spirit. What else can you do? We ain't won the 16 games. So we turn out on the Wednesday against QPR, my midfield partner gets sent off in 5 minutes. We've had the worst preparation in the world, and we ended up winning 1-0 with 10 men.
Amazing.
Yeah, so on the Thursday, or the Friday, back down the pub, Johnny went, leave off. He said, you'll get me the sack.
You did really well that season, though. Like, you got their first, Swindon's first Premier League goal. Did, like, and... turned in some good performances.
No, I probably had a good season personally, because I think with me, I was trying to prove, I felt like basically Tottenham didn't give me a fair crack, and I just wanted to prove that I could do it at that level. So yeah, I mean, we was looking back, you're playing against Liverpool's and Man United's, like Cantona and all great teams, that, and I handled myself all right. So it was a real good season for me, you know. It proved to me I could do it at that level, which, you know, you don't know until you're in there and have a year at it.
Yeah. Speaking of that level, and mentioning Cantona, Swindon 2, Man United 2, you versus Cantona, the stamp, you got him sent off.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you were at home in the Premier League?
Yeah, that was a great game for us. I mean, we was 2-1 up, and basically I'll give him a bit of banter before.
What kind of stuff?
No, I'd actually nutmegged him in the game. And obviously threw it into him, so your legs up, and he saw the red mist. I think I sort of got, I come in and sort of won the tackle, and he just stamped on my chest, which was, at the time, it was great for us because he got sent off. But we, United, as being as good as they are, they got a draw, but it was a good game to Swindon because everyone was expecting us to get dumped.
Mm. When he stamped on your chest, are you like, yes, he's getting sent off here?
Actually, it hurt. I think he cracked one of my ribs, to be honest with you. But that sort of thing that he could do, there was no doubt he was going. So I'll be honest with you, like, it wasn't planned to get him sent off.
But it was a plan.
It wasn't. Oh, but when it happened, it was a right touch.
Do you have a plan to get someone sent off? It's too unlikely,
you can't really. Yeah. I think that you target certain people. Like, the football, you've got to win your battles, haven't you? And by any means, sort of. So there are players that would target certain players to try and get them to see the red mist, you know?
Would you ever go in for a bit of banter knowing you can wind someone up and get that red mist?
Always, yeah.
who was the easiest?
I don't know, I had a few run-ins. I mean, I used to clash a lot with Colton Palmer, and he had good banter, to be fair. Yeah. So yeah, there were certain players that you would, you know, you clashed anyway. But yeah. I think back in the day, for me, it was part of me feeling confident. And at the end of the game, I just shook everyone's hand. I wanted to be their mates. But during the game, you want to win, don't you? So
and how was Carlton after the game?
That particular game, not too good, because he had a nightmare. I was just saying, stand off him, he'll give us the ball, don't worry about him. Every time he had it, the usual stuff. Worst player ever to put on an England shirt. You know?
Was there like a really good players that you found really easy to play against because you just had their number, like Carlton?
I'll be honest with you, I like playing against, believe it or not, players like Vieira or Roy Keane, because David Batty was another one. I just enjoyed that challenge, you know. Yeah. And if you can play well against them, as I say, you come off of there a little bit more sort of confident and a little bit more satisfied, you know, because you're probably pitching yourself against the best. And I didn't mind the challenge of it, the physical side of it, although I wasn't, you know, big in stature. It's more than one way to skin a cat.
Is Roy Keane? He's not. You weren't scared in any way of Roy Keane. I'd be absolutely fucking terrified.
You can't. No, you can't.
I would. If Roy Keane walked in, I would smash a window to get out.
No, I think with football, I probably didn't go into one game not being nervous. I was always nervous, and I think that drives you on. You know, and I like the fact of having that feeling, because now you know you've got to fight. It was one of them. If I went into a game and I didn't feel nervous, something was wrong. So it's, you know, the fight or flight, isn't it? And I always saw it as a, you know, an adrenaline to be up for it. So you couldn't, although I was more scared of playing bad, to be honest with you. Because I used to beat myself up, and because you let yourself down, didn't you?
Yeah.
And that was probably the most thing that wound me up. I wasn't really scared of another opponent.
What about David Batty off the pitch? Did you ever get to know him much? We've heard a lot of rumours about that man.
To be fair to him, he was one of them old school. You could kick him, he wouldn't even let you know he was hurt. You know what I mean? I remember one occasion, I'd sort of gone in quite tough on him and won the ball, but I sneaked up on him and I knew he had the ump and I was waiting for it. The old, you know, because my motto was sort of get your retaliation in first. Neither of us was great in the air, and the ball come up and I flicked the ball on and just felt a crash on the back of the head, and he sort of come through and he nutted the back of my head.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'm not going to show him out. So I jumped up and they reckon I started running and went round in a circle and then just fell on the floor with concussion.
Jan Argafjortoft, he joined Swindon. Bit of a slow start though. He's a bit of a Swindon legend, but it wasn't the case to begin with.
Unbelievable.
Was he rubbish to begin with?
He was when the aeroplane, wasn't he, when he scored, do you remember? He was fantastic, really, because I'll be
Where
honest
did he come
with you.
From? Did he come direct from Norway?
Yeah, and he didn't score for, and he was our record signing, I think 2 points something million, and he couldn't hit a cow's arse with a banjo. And I think out of them games you said, he never looked like scoring. And actually, because I was quite close to Johnny Gorman, you know, and he said to me, this is his last game tonight. And we were playing Ipswich in the cup. And I actually was suspended for that game.
Mm.
So I'm up in the stand and I'm sitting with a few of the lads and I said, if he don't score, he's finito. So anyway, Ipswich went one up. He's having a bit of a mare. And he was in the second half, the old pop-up toaster come out with his number on. So I said, that's it, because he told me he was going back to Norway on the Monday, I think it was. deal was done, and the ball wouldn't go out. So one of the lads have gone, what if he scores? I mean, yeah, yeah, good one. Honestly, this is true. He gets the ball, plays a 1-2, and we're all laughing now. What if it goes, last defender, it bobbles off the defender's knee, hits him, goes through the defender, he runs through, right, and slots it, right? And we all know, there's four of us watching Johnny Gorman, and he turns around and goes, put the number away, put the number away. Right? And it's true. And he ended up, he went on a run and scored about, I think it was something like 10 goals in the next 11 games. Yeah, and his career took off.
Amazing.
He got a move to Middlesbrough, Sheffield United.
But all he was the big one clubs.
Well, better than going back to Norway. And he was one kick away from going back home, you know.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Sliding doors. Is football a lot like that? Is it luck? Is there a big chunk of luck in like making a career for yourself sometimes?
There is, but not to that extreme. that's ridiculous.
So summer of 94, allegedly, Harry Redknapp asked Jamie Redknapp, who's the best player you played against last season? And he says John Moncur, and Harry Redknapp goes, right, picks up the phone. Have you heard that story?
Yeah, Harry did tell me that, funny enough. And which was good, because obviously Jamie was a quality player again. I did have a couple of good games against Liverpool that year, to be fair, so he probably saw the best in me. But typical Harry, yeah, get your confidence, you know, flying. I felt great. And then when I was having a sticky spell, it was always Billy Bonds is signing. Can we get him out the door? But that was in the first season.
Did Harry himself like give you a call? How did that work, that transfer?
Yeah, no, I've got a... Obviously, Chelsea agreed and West Ham agreed £1 million. So it was at the end of the year and I met Glenn and I thought probably I was, you know, on a football point of view, Glenn was probably the manager I would have probably gone to. But for some reason, things happened. It was a chain of events happened and it turned round and my heart ruled my head a little bit and I signed for West Ham.
Because obviously Glenn likes you then, because he's tried to sign you twice. When he became England manager, are you thinking, here we go?
No, because I've rejected him. Once you do that to Glenn, you've had it.
Really?
Yeah. If I'd have signed with him, I might have played for England.
is that what Glenn Hoddle's like?
I think so. I think he was. I'll be honest with you. He'd say no, but probably was. He would see it as I've sort of knocked him back, I would say. Because Glenn was a top manager. There's no two ways about it.
You signed for West Ham on the same day as Joey Beauchamp. He was a West Ham legend who only played for us for 58 days, if you can say he played, because we signed him from Oxford. We ended up selling him back to Swindon because he couldn't handle the commute between London and Oxford.
To be fair, West Ham is the wrong side of London.
406
isn't
the best.
He got his bearings a bit wrong, didn't he, poor lad?
I mean, the team around him, were you going like, ooh, this guy is unbelievable? Was he
good?
He actually was technically good, yeah. And he signed on the same day as me, because after I agreed, they told me they'd signed him. And I thought, well, that's good, because he was one of them with potential. Had a great left foot. And
Did you have to do that joint photo shoot the players do when they sign together?
No, not having any of that. I weren't having that. I'm glad I didn't with Joey.
No.
A lot of darts would have went in my head.
But, crop him out.
I couldn't believe it, be honest. We was obviously new signing, so we signed, and on that week when we went back, Billy took us to Eastbourne for a fitness week, and I'm sitting on the coach with Joey, and he actually said to me, I can't do it. I said, do what? I'm thinking, what, running? Like we're going. He went, I can't, I've got to leave this club. I said, you've only just signed, you're having a laugh, haven't you? He went, nah, he said, someone told me I could get there in an hour. It took me 2.5 hours. Right? It took me 2.5 hours from Oxford. I said, well, you will run at M25. And I'm thinking, the punchline, I'm thinking, is he not sure? He went, nah, he said, I can't leave me burden. I said, they're lynching, mate. I said, don't dare say you don't want to play for West Ham after 3 days or whatever it was. And he did.
Do you not have to drive there to sign for them?
Well,
he might have had a good run.
he signed at midnight.
He signed at midnight, yeah. But I couldn't believe it.
It was a bit of a shambles that summer of 94 for West Ham, because not only did we have that, we also had Harry Redknapp playing a fan in a friendly against Oxford.
Yeah.
And were you involved with that game?
Yeah.
And the fan who came
Joe Beecham loved that game against Oxford. Perfect location.
It was Joey in disguise.
The fan had a goal disallowed.
Yeah, he was better than half the lads. He tore in and gave us a load of abuse.
Problem is, he didn't want to. He didn't want to move, did he? That was the problem. West Ham was too far.
No, he didn't want to move. Joey's twin brother. But he tore in at half time and gave us a load of abuse.
What, he came into the dressing room, this fan?
Yeah, he's run down. So
he ran down the tunnel and broken it. What's security like that?
So Harry's gone.
It's pre-season though. It's not like Upton Park or something.
You get it pre-season. So Harry's gone. What, you think you can do better? Put a kit on. Yeah, all right, then he's gone. And he stuck him on. He stuck him on, yeah.
And that was Marco Bugas.
He was better than Bugas.
So what was he was coming in giving everyone abuse to? Who was he giving the abuse to? Lee Chapman, probably?
You? Probably Chappie, yeah. But no, he was just saying, like, sort it out and all that. So, obviously...
Good tip.
Yeah, Harry...
cheers for that, mate. Yeah, we will sort it out.
I'll take that one on board.
Like, so you've got quite a few characters there when you join West Ham, thinking of players like Ian Bishop, Julian Dix, Don Hutchison. Was there much of a drinking culture there? Was it like out?
Yeah.
Out?
Yeah, it was. I think that the mentality in them days, you probably went out once or twice a week. Most clubs would have done it, and it was seen as team bonding. So it was no different at West Ham. Bish was heavy. I mean, if you got caught with him on an all day, he was in trouble. I remember having a drink with him one day, because he lived near me in Loughton, so we went down the local. We used to go in the carpenters because it was nice and quiet. So anyway, I would always drop a shoulder about 7 o'clock from training, because I thought, you know, I can't.
What time did you get in there if you're leaving at 7?
Well, we got in there afternoon, so half two. So we'd stay in there for a good 3 or 4 hours, and Bish didn't want to go home, so I just used to slip and leave him in there. Anyway, he turned up the next day. He'd been up the hospital, he'd cut all his lip. His lip had been, he'd had an operation on his lip, sewn back in that night. Obviously, fell over drunk. But he took a tram on the street up the country club, like up the nightclub, for a bit of banter. Couldn't find no one to go with. Everyone was thumbing him, wouldn't go with him. So he took this tram off the street. He said, come and I'll treat you. They went out and they went up the, one of the clubs. It was either Faces at the time or the Country Club, yeah.
Right, is he dressing the tramp up? Does he take him down the, like, the shop? And get
Nah, the tramp looked better than him. He was lending him gear.
I also thought he was like hipster, like Ian Bishop's hipster mate.
Yeah.
So you go from Swindon to Harry, like Glenn Hoddle to Harry Redknapp. I wondered how did Harry Redknapp compare as a manager to Glenn Hoddle? Was it a bit more rough and ready, or?
Yeah, I mean,
not as good at playing sweeper.
Yeah,
not chipping 50-yard balls around the training ground. No.
Yeah, little. You know, again, Harry knows the game, obviously, and different styles, different ways of man management. But I think he could bring the best out in players. Harry, he knew how to. He had a good eye for a player, and he knew how to sort of man-manage, I think, a little bit better. Mm. Glenn was, I would say, a bit more tactically astute and knew the game, and technically was probably better. But Harry knew how to put a group of lads together and how to sort of bring the best out in them. That's what I thought, you know. But I suppose after a few years of hearing him, You knew, like, half of it was cobblers. As I say, I was the best player never to play for England when I was doing well, and when I was having one, I was Billy Bonsign and getting rid of him. Typical Harry.
Who had more of a temper, or who dished out the hairdryer treatment more, or was it Harry or Glenn?
I think Harry would be probably lose it a little bit more, but He would do it, Harry, when you sort of knew it was going to happen. Do you know what I mean?
It's when you're like, going in half time, 1-0 down.
Yeah, or throw the bottle up the wall or kick the sandwiches.
Does that work? Like, if a manager just loses it all the time, it just loses its impact, right?
Yeah. No, I think, as you say, that is man management again, isn't it? Sometimes. Yeah. Glenn was... I mean, I remember one game with Glenn, I was having a beast, and he came in and I thought, oh, here we go, like, I'm going to get the Shepherds. And he went, basically, best player on the pitch, John Monger, he said, you know, he said,
really?
Yeah, he said, ain't having his greatest game, he said, but you look at him, don't shy away from wanting the ball. He said, shown.
I mean, he's cocking up every time he gets it.
Yeah, he's giving it away every time he gets it. But he's, but what he was trying to say, what he was trying to do, and that was early when I'd signed for him, I think it was a bit of reverse psychology. So I went out in the second half and totally different, where, you know, that sometimes is a good way of doing it. As
did
I say.
Did he ever mention Eileen Drury to you?
He did, as it happens, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Eileen. But
some people rate her. Did you rate her?
I didn't. No, I never met her or anything like that. So I couldn't tell you a lot about her. I didn't go and see her. But
yeah.
What was the Ray Parler one? Wasn't
it? He said, allegedly, he went in there and asked for a short back and sides.
Yeah, that was his lot.
mentioned the hairdryer treatment of Harry. That's, like, you said, like, him kicking the sandwiches, but didn't you once throw a plate of sandwiches during a half time row with Harry?
Yeah, well, I actually booted him up in the air and went into one. And Mark Foray, bless him, who's dead now, he was a lovely fella, Mark. And he was sitting there and a quarter sandwich had landed on his head and he never knew it. But you just see the whites of his eyes because he couldn't believe how someone, like, you know, he hadn't seen that before because I completely flipped and went mad. And it sort of broke the mood because you could cut the atmosphere with a knife and basically everyone looked around and started cracking up because he had an egg and cress on top of his head.
Next time we lose anything, I need to get a sandwich on Foray's head. That's what I need to do.
Do you remember what you lost it about?
I was subbed that day and he didn't put me on. And I was so angry that I was up while he was dressing the lads down because they got beat 2-0. I was up looking at the sandwiches on purpose and I'd actually nudged my mate and said, look, I'll get him on a bit of string here, because I was fuming, I wanted to have a row. And he went, for fuck's sake, sit down. And that was it, that was the red. So I stood back, sit down, and I volleyed the sandwiches because I was hanging off the edge of the thing. And it actually hit the roof, the plate hit the roof with the tray.
Yeah.
And they just went everywhere and that was it. That was the start of the big argument. But, yeah.
So you were angling at the start of that row by looking at the sandwiches.
I couldn't believe he didn't put me on that game because, you know, we was 2-0, we lost 2-0 and we didn't look like scoring, you know what I mean? And I knew I could have changed, had an impact.
When you're on the bench, are you like tapping on the shoulder going, bring me on, bring me on? Does that kind of thing happen?
It did a little bit. I did a couple of times with Harry. Our relationship was all right. I mean, he sort of knew what I was like. I've been there a long time and I knew what he was like. I had respect for him. Mm. So, you know.
On the other side of that anecdote, what's the food like at half-time and full-time then? I'm loving this idea of this spread of like a buffet.
That John's just kicking around. Yeah. Bonavons
what
everywhere.
What do you get? And is it...
Nah, it's basic sandwiches.
And do you get like... are you drinking tea at half-time? Because we've seen things where there'll be players just drinking tea. Is that...
Tea did come in, yeah. Tea.
Blows my mind that you play half an hour, 45 minutes of football, and they have fancy a cup of tea.
They used to have a pint of milk, didn't they?
Have a pint of milk.
For early doors, yeah. Like there was when I'm talking back.
That's going to sit heavy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Full fat, semi skimmed.
Yeah, no, yeah, full fat. I think. Like, I'm talking late 80s.
Yeah.
Early 90s, yeah. There would be milk in the dressing room, and people. If you remember the old FA Cup finals.
Yeah.
It was you would see it. I mean, what was the milk cup that was sponsored?
Yeah,
wasn't it at one point? Yeah. That was all. So you had all that in the dressing rooms, but there was always tea. I mean, people would have tea before the game, definitely. And yeah,
I remember having a pre-game tour of Upton Park and seeing Alvin Martin would eat a bar of chocolate before fruit and nut.
Yeah,
pre-match.
Yeah, well, that's the big thing that really changed. I think, you know, remember having. Oh, we used to have steak and chips pre-match meal.
That's so you know heavy. What I mean?
Like a brick in your stomach.
How long before the match would you have steak and chips?
Well, it would be like, you probably look at, say, 2.5 hours before kick-off.
Wow.
It, yeah. But that, I mean, I'm talking, as I say, at that time. And it all changed, you know, the sports science come in, didn't it?
And they went, no, steak and kidney pies, 2.5 hours. Yeah. Right. What?
I remember when I signed at West Ham, like Shirley, her name. Did you know Shirley? Yeah, lovely woman, Shirley. but she would do like egg and bacon. And I thought, blimey. And then I think it was the first month I was there, there was pie and mash, and I thought, God, it's fantastic here. So I've come to the right place.
So you had a reputation at Upton Park, West Ham, being a bit of a prankster. There's a few incidents I'd like to talk about. Firstly, the, you know, the famous one of there not being enough training kit and the way you dealt with that.
Yeah.
Rio Ferdinand says it's the funniest thing he ever saw in football.
Yeah, I think because it was one of the coldest days of the year. We had quite a influx of foreign players and the, you know, they, a lot of them weren't used to that weather. So what would happen, you'd get your kit and basically the training, the tracksuits and stuff would be in a bin next to it. So it was help yourself, but there was enough to go round. And I used to time my journey in, so I was a little bit, you know, I didn't get in too early. So it happened a couple of times and I thought, oh, I can't have this. And I've come in and I've gone to see Eddie, the kit man, and I said, look, Ed, any tracksuits? He said, nah, it's only what's in the basket. I said, well, there's nothing in there, Ed. There's a sock in there. I mean, where do you want me to put that? So anyway, I thought, I ain't having this no more. I'm not having it. Like, everyone's putting two tracksuits on or whatever. A few of them have. So I stripped off bollock naked and I flew out the door, and all the lads waited outside Harry's office, and it was like sleet coming down. And there was this massive puddle, and I've come tearing out, done a Klinsmann through the puddle, right, jumped up. I said, come on, boys. I said, I'm doing taking the warm-up. Right, brace yourself. And the lads were just falling about laughing. But Harry's actually seen it, and he's gone berserk. Like, get him in. Like, we've got Sky coming later on. All that. So he calls me in the office, obviously. He said, what's going on? He said, he said, this is taking it too far. I said, well, look, H, I said, I'll keep coming, I'll get no kit. I said, I ain't having it no more.
Are you still naked at this point?
No, no, I don't. We both was. But, yeah, so it done its job. In the end, he said to Eddie, he said, listen, put one by for him every day. Don't let him, he can't not have a tracksuit.
So it works.
So it works, yeah.
Naked protest.
Yeah, naked protest.
What about the paint mark? There's like paint for the pitch markings was knocking about. Didn't you like want to stick your head in that?
Yeah, but typical West Ham, like, we're changing and the fella's painting the walls. And
so it was like wall paint?
Yeah, Chad Relief, he was tossing it over, they say. Bit of emulsion. So it was actually like, it was a bit of a fun day. We was in, there was about 10 of us in, and a few of the lads had gone away on, I think it was one of the weeks where there was international duty. So I painted my head white and come running out. And
how did you do it? Do you have a brush and stick your head in there?
No, I painted it and then he'd done the back. Okay, yeah, so that was great. That was
the fumes. You must have been high as a kite.
It was raining and all, and as we was doing shooting practice, and every time I was doing these diving headers, there was a big explosion of paint coming up. It was fantastic.
When loads of players are on international duty, is it like?
Yeah, it's a bit of a dead week.
Bit of a piss around.
It is really, because you can't have a proper session, can you?
Yeah.
So, and
does
time,
Harry even turn up in those situations?
He didn't that day. Thankfully.
You struggled with injuries a bit at West Ham, but there was one injury in particular against Arsenal where you were getting carried off by the St John's ambulance and they didn't quite manage it.
No, I believe that was when the prank turned on me, didn't it? I remember because it was the first game I played against Vieira, and basically it was a night game. An Arsenal ball quiet, they give them half at the end, and they had a couple of thousand, I reckon it was. So there's a lot of Arsenal there. It was a great atmosphere, and I sort of clashed with him on the halfway line, and I knew I'd sort of strained my knee. It wasn't terrible, but I knew from I couldn't carry on, sort of strained my medial ligament. And basically, it was near the chicken run, so the old St John's ambulance boys come on. It took them about 10 minutes. Because they used to cart you off on the stretcher, didn't they?
Yeah.
So they've decided, I mean, John Green was a physio, so I'm sort of talking to him about the injury. So he said, no, you can't carry on. But they've took me round the Arsenal bit. So the game's now going on, and I'm thinking, oh, I didn't have to go that way. So one of the old boys, basically, he looked about 80 years old, and he was struggling. And I'm now sitting up, and I can hear him, like, breathing. I said, you all right, mate? And he didn't even answer, you know. And I'm thinking, well, as he's gone round behind the goal, like as he's turned, because at Upton Park it's a slope, isn't there?
Yeah.
He's gone over, hasn't he, like a sack of tomatoes. Well, I fell on top of him. He's dropped me, the fella, in front of the Arsenal fans. And I'm laying on top. I've actually got him to take the dairy off it. I didn't even feel me kneeling. Can you imagine the embarrassment? I've rolled him on the stretcher and tried to pick him up. To try and, you know. And there's a bit, all the grounds laughing and what have you. But anyway, he got me back on.
And the match is going on at this point?
Yeah, the match was going on. And I still get Arsenal fans now come up to me and say, I was there that night, they dropped you off that stretcher. But no, it was a terrible night for me.
What about pre-match rituals? Did you have one yourself for your playing career?
No, not really. No. There was a lot of lads did.
Mm. Stuart Pearce did, didn't he? Didn't you wind him up? You interfered with his pre-match ritual?
Yeah, Stuart Pearce was like very strategic. He had a routine. I used to watch him because around that time I was sort of about 36, so I was sort of in and out of the team. Mainly, I would say a lot of games I was sub that season. So I used to watch him prepare and stuff. And he would have raw vegetables at the hotel. You know, he was like a caged lion, and he would do his sort of get there.
What an idiot! You're all having steak and chips. Going, who's this idiot?
Yeah, no, they all changed in. Yeah, so he'd get this little clock out. And he used to put it above the peg. You know, it was a terrible clock. I used to look at it and think, what is that? Plastic
what
thing.
What did it look like? What was...
I think like a Mickey Mouse clock. I said to him, what is that? He went, that's my clock. I said, what? I said, there's clocks in the changing room. He said, nah. He went, this ain't let me down for 25 years, this. Right? So I used to think, I'd love to smash that clock. You know? You know, and the lads went, so one of the boys went, don't dare touch his clock. He said, he gets the ump. Because they knew him from Forest. So I thought, that's fucking red rags, you're balling it from there. So anyway, he used to put his boots on, go away, come back, have a look at his clock, go away, have a rub, come back, you know, do his shoulder rolls, come back, you know, it was a strict...
Really set routine.
Set routine, but every time he'd come away, like, I don't know, a couple of minutes at a time, come back, have a look at his clock. So I kept nudging it back a minute. Right? So he wouldn't really suss it, you know. Anyway... I think I nicked about 10 minutes on the clock, right? So he's gone to Harry, why are they going out early? Well, they're playing Ipswich. So Harry's gone, like, obviously had a look at his Rolex. He's gone, no, it's half past, Piercy. He said, look, there's a clock up there. He went, no, but this clock's never wrong, Harry. Right? So he said, well, I can't help you there, mate. He said, I've definitely half past on this. He went, it can't be. He said, the clock, he picks the clock up and starts rattling it, right? It can't be wrong. Right. He goes into one, so I thought, all the lads now running out, they're going out the door. So I thought, oh, get away here. Anyway, he kicked the right wing all over the park. I think it was his name, Jermaine Wright or something like that. He flipping kicked him over the other side of the pit. He was unreal, Piercy, like a lion. And we actually won the game, so it was all right.
Did you tell him?
No, so on the Monday,
yeah,
we come in. I used to give him a bit of banter about his Barnet or whatever, because he used to drive in from Hungerford every day, and it's a long way. But I'm sure he had his head hanging out the car because his Barnet was terrible. So I said, like, come on the motorbike again, Piercy. And he didn't say nothing. So I thought, oh, perhaps he knows. Anyway, get ready for training. So he said, Monk, I have a word with you. So I said, yeah, no worries, mate.
Were you nervous?
A little bit. I'm thinking, I looked up to see where the door was. Do you know what I mean? Like, can I get there? He went, listen, he said, I know you like a bit of banter. He said, but if you ever touch that clock again, he said, I'll rip your head off. And he was serious, he was serious. I said, what are you on about? He said, I know it was you. He's going, I know it was you. I said, no, you, I said, the fuck, you, listen. I said, everything comes to an end one day. The poor old clock, his legs are gone. You know. He weren't happy.
Did you ever touch the clock again?
No.
Got to ask you before we finish about an iconic 90s moment, the day that West Ham stopped Man United winning the title in 1995. West Ham had been in a relegation battle, had secured safety, we had nothing to play for, and then pull out one of the most memorable performances in several years, drawing 1-0 and stopping them. You played that day.
Yeah, Yeah, that was great. I mean, that week was fantastic because we played Liverpool in the week and we got safe. We beat them 3-0, I think it was. And obviously the pressure was lifted. I think we went out on a bender. Yeah, until the Sunday game. I think we all just reported Sunday. So
the John Gorman approach.
The John Gorman approach. That's what we got to name it, haven't we? Johnny G approach. So we
fancy
turned
going
up
to the John Gorman approach. That's my new pub.
Yeah, we turned up. Obviously, all the pressure was off, and the atmosphere was electric. And actually, the first half of that game, I think that's the best first half I've ever played in. We was fantastic.
1-0 up.
1-0 up, but we outplayed them. I mean, they couldn't get near us.
What was the atmosphere like between? Because the Man U players obviously care so much more than the West Ham players in that situation.
Well, I think the pressure got to them. We had no pressure, so they was a little bit for them. They were stuttering, you know, and you could see it. And where we was just, as I say, I think we got safe and it done us such a, give us such a lift. We was playing like beyond all of us.
Did you know what was happening at Anfield? Or did you care?
Didn't care, really. I mean, we wanted, because none of us really liked Man U, so we wanted Blackburn to win. But second half, they probably battered us, you know, and as the game went on, it was like heroic performance from Ludo. He pulled off 3 or 4 fantastic saves, and
he was good when the cameras turned up, wasn't he?
He was, yeah, he was.
Not so good when they weren't there.
They weren't, no. But but no, it was a great game. I remember I was on the back post with Keeney right at the death. And I went, "You ain't gonna win it this year."
You had to learn your lesson again. No, playoff final.
Exactly. I think it was a couple of minutes ago, and he said, "I'm going to do you in the tunnel." And I went, "I'm not going to be in the tunnel. I'm going to be celebrating with the fans."
No, what was it like afterwards? So when it ended, did it end first?
It was like we'd won the league, the way the crowd were.
Yeah.
Because they hated Man U, didn't they? The West Ham fans. So it was a weird one because it was like the best reception you'd ever get, and really we'd had a poor season.
Yeah.
But the way it ended, it was like, you know, we was heroes, especially stopping them win the title.
And how did the Man U players take it?
Oh, devastated, weren't they? I mean, to be honest, you know, like, it's probably the worst thing that can happen. If you think about whole league season and you lose on one kick of the game,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're going to be absolutely devastated. But we didn't care.
One more question, Chris, you always ask.
If you could go back in time, I'll give you a little button, you press it, and you go back to the 1st of January 1990 and do it all over again, would you?
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Fantastic, yeah.
Would you still do the clock?
That's what made it all then. That's what
made it. Would you do all the same stuff again, the training naked? Without a doubt. Yeah.
I think, you're in, it's an entertainment business, isn't it? But to be around the lads and have the laughs that we all had, you know, that's the thing that you do miss. Obviously, playing in front of the crowd, the adrenaline of that. And but what better lifestyle, getting paid for something you love doing?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for the...
No, thank you, boys. Enjoyed it.
Tremendous atmosphere building up. This is Moncur. Moncur! Oh, it took a deflection, but it found the net. And West Ham regain the lead.
That was John Moncur. Lovely man. Do you like John Moncur more than anyone in the world, Chris?
I love his stories. He is, in many respects, the perfect 90s footballer. Spurs, Swindon under Glenn Hoddle, West Ham. Yeah. You know, what you want out of Quickly Kevin is a journeyman. And even though he was, I think, very much an elite footballer, he covered enough ground.
When you say what you want out of Quickly Kevin is a journeyman, that'll be why our favourite 2 episodes are Gary Neville and Stuart Pearce, the 2 ultimate journeymen. Now, review Haikyuu.
It's review Haikyuu. 90s football review Haikyuu. Review Haikyuu.
Okay, we have a couple of review haiku absolute crackers for you this week, and Michael is back to judge. The first one is written by the aptly named Titus Bramblewidge, and the title is Pierce Prose. It begins like this: nothing on his wall except one England photo. Stuart Pierce hates fame.
Oh, that is beautiful.
round.
That is absolutely beautiful.
That's going to be tough. That's going to be tough to beat.
Or you've got this one by Gabby Logan and Barry Venison. I presume they haven't teamed up on this. It begins like this and ends like this. True podcast cracker with Cernacek and Shaka, post in Babs Knacker.
Oh.
What are you going with?
Wow. In any other week, both of those would be a clear winner. Yeah,
I think the standard's really gone up recently as well.
I think by a nose, Stuart Pearce.
Yeah, Stuart Pearce. Title be. Bramblewidge, you have won a Graham Says Hit Les mug. If you want to leave your own review haiku, we'll be picking them up again in Series 5 next year. You can do so on iTunes. We'll pick them up, leave a haiku, and next year you could be the proud owner of a Graham Says Hit Les mug or a better prize should we determine that one is available.
Finally, we should end with a quiz, shouldn't we? We always do.
Yep.
To play a song to end the show. I'm going to ask a question this week. You two can play off against it. It's one of my old classics. I'm going to name a year. You've just got to name any team that won a major trophy.
I love this.
Or any player that won one of the major player awards.
I genuinely get quiz envy with this. I wish I'd come up with this round.
It's a good round, isn't it?
It's a good round.
1997, please. Michael, to start.
1997. Okay, so Premier League winners were Manchester United.
Correct. I'm not going to check that one. I know that one. That's the only one I knew. Always a mistake not to choose a international tournament year. I regret that already.
Yeah.
I want to say this, but I'm not convinced. You know when they're saying a 50-50 tackle, you should always be committed.
Yeah.
I'm loose in this tackle.
You're pulling out.
I think Leicester City won the League Cup in 97.
I know they did.
Did they?
Yeah. Okay. How many more have you got in the locker, Chris?
I've got two. I've just realised I've got two in the locker.
Fuck.
Yeah, I've got the FA Cup in the locker.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I've just realised.
Shit.
I'm winning this.
Against Michael.
Okay. Champions League winners that year were Borussia Dortmund.
That is a great call. Champions League, 1997.
Paul Lambert marked Zidane out of the game.
Correct answer. Chris.
Chelsea won the FA Cup against Middlesbrough in the final.
Yes, shit. Roberto Di Matteo.
And I've got a fucking great one in their locker.
Have you got another one in the locker?
A really good one that you're just going to fucking love.
So we've had League Cup. We've had FA Cup.
Yes, effing, eh?
Yeah.
Come on, mate.
Some young people won't listen to this podcast about 90s football.
I immediately regretted swearing. Yeah. I was like, why am I? Because I'm so excited about this one.
It's all right. No one under the age of 30 is going to listen to this.
Sorry to everyone listening.
So we've had the big four, arguably, in a year that isn't...
FA, League,
and Champions League.
Yeah, continental tournaments, maybe.
Oh, you've wanked one.
No, I meant like Serie A or whatever.
Oh, okay, so we can go for foreign leagues.
Yeah.
Well, you
can have any league you want, mate.
I think...
Any major league.
Well, I think, and I'm hoping this snooker's skull... Wasn't 97 the year that Naeem lobbed David Seaman? So Zaragoza won the...
The what?
I think that's 96.
Cup winners' cup. UEFA Cup.
96. Because they won it in 95 and they were back in the final a year later.
Shit.
The winners of the UEFA Cup Winners' Cup, 1997...
I've lost it.
Was Barcelona. They beat PSG 1-0.
So you have to...
Oh, they have to get one to win?
I think so, because I went first.
Yeah.
You've got one. England won Le Tournoi in 99.
Oh, no, not Le Tournoi. That's not a competitive...
I'm not, absolutely do one.
I would have picked the fucking Charity Shield if I thought Le Tournoi was going to
count. Charity Shield, who do you want for the charity?
Manchester United.
Go on. That's a thing. Look.
I'll give you the win, only if you pick Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas is the end song.
Well, seeing as I defeated Michael, as a small little olive branch, I would like to extend the theme to Home Alone by John Williams to see if you'd accept.
I reject your olive branch. I graciously, in the spirit of Christmas, I accept.
Lovely stuff. Well, thank you very much. We'll be back next week for the end of series quiz, as we always are. Until then, from Josh, Michael and myself, Robbie Slater... See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.